Jim Chambers, rewind. Where were you born, please?
I was born in Hackney, East London.
Which year was this?
It was 1923.
Did you grow up and have your schooling in Hackney?
No, I had my schooling in Dagenham. The family moved to Dagenham.
Why did you move to Dagenham?
I can't really say. I don't know where it was. Father's employment took us there.
What job did your father do?
He was a postman.
And you went to school in Dagenham?
Yes, when I was about 5 years old.
How old were you when you left school?
14.
1937?
Yes.
Did you get a job?
Yes. Yes, before I was 14, actually.
Was that in Dagenham?
No. They subsequently moved to North London, Holloway.
What job did you get?
Oh, just a shop assistant.
Did you join the TA before the war?
No, I was too young.
Did you hear Neville Chamberlain declare war on Germany?
Yes, I did. Yes, on a Sunday.
Can you describe the circumstances under which you heard it?
Yes. My two eldest brothers, who were reserve ex-soldiers, they had previously been called up in the August, and another two elder brothers were members of the TA, and they were called up. They were called up, and on a declaration of war, they reported to a local building. So that's how it sticks in the mind.
How did you feel when you heard the news that we were at war with Germany?
Well, I don't know, really. I probably felt it was a elation, really, a bit of joy.
Why?
Well, we don't really know the consequences, do we? At that age, it all seems very romantic. But you learn later that it isn't.
Were you in any early bombing of London?
Oh, yes.
German Air Force?
Oh, yes, quite severe bombing.
What was your address during the bombing?
We lived in a block of flats in Holloway Road called Lorraine Estate. It was N7 Postal District.
Do you remember the address?
It was 29 Chelmsford House.
Can you describe what the bombing was like that you experienced?
Oh, yeah, very severe. Lots of loud noises and broken glass. Several fires from incendiaries. I think a local church was demolished by a landmine, they called them then, I think.
Which church was that, do you remember?
Not its actual name, no. It was on the corner of Caledonian Road and Camden Road.
How frightening was the bombing for you?
On reflection, I don't think that we were actually frightened. I think it was, we didn't really know, how dangerous it was. It seemed like a jolly good thing with all these young men about.
Did any bombs actually fall near you?
Near? Oh, yes. But not on the estate itself, which was a big LCC housing estate. The estate in which we lived. It's quite a large estate. It's still there today.
So no bombs hit the Lorraine estate?
No, that was free of bombing, yeah. But there was... some incendiary bombs fell on a timber yard that was next to the estate. And myself and quite a few of the other lads jumped over there and helped put out the incendiary bombs.
What did you use to put them out?
Well, it was just smothered them, really. And I think we sort of, those that we could, we kicked about into a safe area off the wood. It was quite a large timber yard.
So you didn't use water to put them out?
Not that I can recall, no.
What, do you remember where the timber yard was?
It's in Holloway Road. It's between the estate and the railway.
Which month do you think that was?
Oh, I couldn't really say. No, I wouldn't know, really.
Did you use air raid shelters?
No, personally, no, but my mother and my mother did, and they would go to the either the shelter that was on the estate or use the local underground, which is Holloway Road on the Piccadilly line. They'd use that.
Didn't you ever do that?
No. No, just Macho, I suppose, Bravo. Yeah, quite a lot of people didn't. Quite a lot of people were of the opinion that they were going to be killed as soon as we killed at home. Did and conditions weren't very good in the shelters or the underground, really.
Did you see the conditions in the underground?
Oh, yes. Yes, I used to go down and see my mother.
What did you used to take down with her?
Just some bedding, really. Just some bedding and a drink of some sort. Water or tea, because couldn't keep things really hot in those days, you see.
What bedding would you take down?
Oh, just some blankets and a pillow. Wouldn't be a mattress, because...
So she just used to have to sleep on the hard...
Yeah, sure, on the platform, yeah. Yeah.
Could she keep warm down there?
Oh, yes, yeah. Yeah, once the trains had stopped running, it used to get pretty warm.
What difference did the trains make to
Well, they caused the draft, didn't they? Dragging the air through the tunnel or pushing it through. So that would cause quite a bit of turbulence down there.
What did people like your mother who were using the tubes use for toilets then?
Well, I've no idea. I really don't. Doesn't bear thinking about. There aren't many underground stations that are provided with toilets at all.
What was your mother's state of morale then?
Oh, she was a pretty cheerful woman, yes. She had a lot to worry about. We were a large family. She got the younger children evacuated. The girls older than myself were off, they were married, and the elder brothers were in the forces.
Do you think using the tubes affected your mother's state of health?
No, I shouldn't think so. No.
Did you have a special place in the tube that she always used?
No, I think it was just a question of first come, first served, and, you know, you settled down where you could. There was no allocation of places for people, because they never knew who would be there or who wouldn't. You know,
Was there any scramble or unpleasantness for places?
No, not that I can recall. No, I think they used to resolve the any situations that might arrive, you know, by themselves.
What did you personally feel about the German air crews who were carrying out the bombing?
I don't think I had any personal views, really. It was just a question that we were at war and, you know, why were we at war? I had no idea why we were at war. I mean, people talking to me about freedom and all that sort of thing didn't mean a thing, really. Depends on where you are on the social scale, doesn't it?
But did you feel any hatred towards the pilots?
No, I don't think so.
Did you see the devastation elsewhere in London?
Oh, yes, yes. Oh, yes, I used to travel... I used to travel to work, which was in Farringdon Road, which is quite near... Well, it's part of the City of London, I suppose. It's in the Oban. Yes, they were often, you know, you'd go there, there'd be water mains spouting and gas mains afire and buildings falling down. Usual devastation, really.
What was public morale like in London?
People seemed to be very cheerful, really, and just accepted it as, you know, it's something that's got to be got over. Get on with it.
And what was your job in Farringdon Road?
I was a shop assistant in a photographic materials wholesaler. That's a mouthful. But, yes, and of course that, as the war progressed, materials became unavailable, so eventually we closed it. The owner was called up. He was over 30. He was called up for war service, so the business closed. That would be in June 1942. Yeah.
So you lost your job?
Yes. And as I was of conscription age, nobody really wanted to employ me, as I was, you know, still fit, and they knew that I would be called up. So I was out of work for 2 weeks. I did find jobs in between for a week or two, but there was a period of a fortnight when I was out of work.
And then?
I was called up in July.
How did you feel about being called up?
Not very well, really. I'd had pre-knowledge of what to expect from my older brothers of the army and its ways of carrying on, really.
What did they tell you about it?
To keep out of it, really. Yeah.
What didn't they like about it?
Well, just the, I don't know what you call it, I suppose the common word for it is bullshit, but just bloody-mindedness, really. It was, I don't think they gave any real thought to the question of what to do with these people when they got them in the forces. They'd always march them up and down the hill, so that was what they continued to do. And they always polished brasses and polished boots, even though they knew that polishing boots, oh, spit and polish, that's right, ruined the leather, cracked it. But it still persisted in doing it, so.
Where did you do your basic training?
Basic training was done at Newport, Isle of Wight. It was a place called Albany Barracks, which I believe is now Albany Prison.
How were you treated during the basic training?
Well, like, I don't know, really. They were just doing their job as they thought best. It didn't appear to be much humanity.
Was there any bullying or sadism?
Well, I suppose, excuse me, depends on what degree you go. I mean, I can recall standing on the square with the rest of the, I don't know what they were now, platoon, I suppose, and this sergeant thought that he would have us stand there for watching the clock for 15 minutes at Port Arms. Is where you hold the rifle in front of you like that.
Horizontally?
Yes, yeah. And he seemed to think that was quite good discipline, but I don't think it worked very well.
Did it create resentment?
Oh, yeah, yeah. They were dealing with a new set of people, really, because these people were conscripts. They weren't, you know, pre-war volunteer.
Were there any of the conscripts who couldn't do it?
No, not really. No, I can't recall anybody actually letting a rifle fall, but I can remember this huge clock on the parade ground, on the building, on the parade ground. I can also remember the convicts in Parkhurst Prison, which adjoined Albany Barracks. They were up on the wall leaning over, laughing at us.
During this Port Arms business? Mm.
Well, most of the time during the training. Mm.
Did it creates a sense of grievance, the way you were treated?
Oh, yes, yeah.
Any other memories of the basic training?
Yes, there was also the digging of slit trenches over the Isle of Wight. We seem to dig them everywhere, these holes, about 4 or 5 feet deep, clay, and usually filled up with rainwater, and then we were ordered to jump into them and take up defensive postures. They were still fighting the 1480.
Sounds as though you didn't get a good initial impression of them.
No, it was terrible, really. Terrible. And the rifles that we had were, I don't know how old they were, I think some were Boer War. There weren't many Lee Enfields about, which was the modern rifle, really. But as for modern equipment, there was nothing there at all, really. It was what they called a primary training centre. This is where they sorted out the square pegs and the round pegs and supposedly put them in the correct holes. They did some psychological tests. And
what do you remember about the psychological testing?
I just remember they gave us various papers to tick or cross, whatever it was, and then we had a hearing test that was to distinguish various Morse code signals. That's as much as I can remember about it, really.
Did you ever get people who deliberately tried to get out of the army by feigning something or other?
I can't really recall anybody, you know, any actual instance of that. There were, I thought, one or two who purported to be either mentally deranged or physically disabled in some manner, trying to dodge various activities. But I think the people that they were trying to impress just didn't accept it. Well, you must remember that these people that were in the regular army then, and a lot of things that people don't seem to appreciate is that prior to the war, you know, periods being small, these people weren't very well educated. I'm talking about the non-commissioned officers. So the it was a different atmosphere, really.
And after the basic training, what happened to you then?
Then you were, I think that did it. It sorted it out, and then I was sent up to Barnard Castle. Was that? Can't think where.
County
it is.
Durham.
County Durham, is it? Yeah, it was a tank training school there, and we were sent up there for 6 weeks training.
What did that consist of?
Well, it was quite different altogether, really. It consisted mainly, I was selected to be a gunner operator, and of course I did quite intensive radio work, learning the Morse code, receiving and sending, the use of the tank radio, I think it was called a 19 set. And we were taught to drive lorries and the tanks. We were familiarised with the tanks, the gunnery, and how to drive them. And yes, it was much better and more interesting than the Isle of Wight. Different people altogether. Not so much square bashing. And yeah, it was generally more interesting.
Did you go into a unit at this time?
No, this was just basic tank training, just to get you familiarised with the various tanks. I think that lasted 6 weeks.
And then?
Then you were allocated to a regiment.
Which one were you allocated to?
The 23rd Hussars. and we were stationed at Chippenham Park near Newmarket.
What happened to you at Chippenham Park?
Well, I was allocated to one of the squadrons, and then to a troop, and then to a tank crew. We had Crusader tanks at the time.
What did you think of them?
Well, not a great deal, actually. Because it started again, because they were... I think they just didn't know what to do with people, because there's only so much training you can do. You know, there are only so certain parts on a gun you can learn about. There's not much else you can do. And then it started with the bullshit again, you know, marching up and down and pointing gun rifles in the air, shooting aircraft down and shifting coal from A to B. And A squadron would shift it one day and B squadron would shift it the next day and C squadron would shift it the day after. And that was the sort of thing that went on.
So was it because of all this that you applied for the Jedros?
Well, it did subsequently, but that was after we moved from Chippenham up to Yorkshire, Bridlington, when the Jedburghs came round. Well, they asked for volunteers. We weren't, whilst we were in Yorkshire, that they came round and asked for volunteers for this. They didn't actually tell you what the work was. They said it was, you know, said it was, would be dangerous, but they needed the radio operators.
Do you know when it was that you volunteered for the Jedburghs?
In 1943, so I should think, I would think it'd be somewhere about the September, October 43, probably.
Was it easy to get released from the 23rd Hussars to join?
Oh, yes, I think the people who had organised the Jedburghs had much, a great deal of power, really, to get the armoured corps to release radio operators who obviously need quite a bit of training. So, and this is why they were recruited from the armoured corps, because they were readily trained or had the basic knowledges of radio work.
How proficient were you in wireless operating?
Well, I reached the required standard in the armoured corps, which I'm memory I think was about 10 words a minute Morse code. And like send and receive, plus the just the general use of the radio, really.
Do you remember any interview that you had for SOE?
No, not as such. It was, I can only recall that when we got to Milton Hall, which is near Peterborough. Building there when we went there, and I think that's when the interviews and they were testing your Morse skills and general fitness. And that's when it's from Milton Hall.
Any incidents that happened to you at Milton Hall?
Well, I thought in actual fact that when we dropped off the back of these three tonners, we'd dropped back into the 1418 war. Because there was one of these glorious RSMs standing there with all full glory, with all his buttons gleaming and patches and all his various accoutrements and spit and polish. And another sergeant there, and he'd got his stick under his arm. And we had to all fall in and stand to attention, and he marched us about here and there.
This is at Milton Hall?
This is at Milton Hall. We thought we were, you know, what had we done? But, and then Milton Hall was a very, very busy place. I can't really recall the time that we got up in the morning, must have been about 5:30 or so, and then the day would finish about 10 in the evening. So it's quite a long day and quite a varied program, really. There was radio, in ciphering, parachute training, armed combat, all sorts of all sorts of activities, and yes, day was filled. But this, the colonel who's in charge of the establishment, Colonel Spooner, he was also a throwback to the Great War, and we had to march, you know, when you consider a day, we had to fall in outside each, after we'd finished each lesson, we had to fall in outside and then march there from that building to the next building, which would probably be 5 yards away, but we still had to do this. You know, it was a complete waste of time. And I did hear that this is, I'm just talking about the radio operators, not the officers. The officers were doing their training separately. Let's see now. Yeah, I believe that there were a couple of lieutenants who wrote directly to the War Office complaining about the conditions at Milton Hall by the administration, I mean. And they wrote directly to the War Office and complaining about this Colonel Spooner and his regime. And lo and behold, he and his staff were whipped out of Milton Hall and Colonel Musgrave put in his stead. And after that was all change. But the two officers were moved out of the Jedburghs. They were shipped out. They'd done the wrong thing.
What was the change in regime when Musgrave took over?
Well, it was all free and easy. You just finished one lesson and walked to the next. There was none of this marching about. And so there was none of this. People were given their own responsibility. You looked after yourself and you ensured it, and as we were all volunteers.
Was the radio work any different from the tank corps?
Oh yes, more intensive. And we're also working, working in code, apart from Morse code of course, but the actual messages were coded, and they were formulated in groups of five letters each group, so that was different. And we didn't stay at Milton Hall, we went to Hendley-on-Thames. There was...
Just before you leave Milton Hall, what was the unarmed combat like?
Oh, that was pretty strenuous. Yes, we were taught how to kill people by various methods. How to use a knife, the the commando knife, the stabbing knife.
How were you supposed to use that?
Well, they said to usually go in into the back. Was usually you put your arm round, your forearm round somebody's neck, and then press the knife up in between the ribs.
Do you think that would have been easy to do?
Oh, yeah, once you know how to do it, yes.
Were you supposed to plunge it in the heart?
Well, no, you just go up the back, and there's loads of vital organs there. Through the back, you can usually strike something that's pretty vital.
And what other methods did you learn to kill people?
Well, they